After a while, the bullies gave up and walked. I like your mom, I said through bites of bread.
Oh, you guys would get along great. She loves food and music, and is on a constant hunt for a good reason to laugh. My dad, on the other hand, well, if you think I'm shy, you should meet him. He's much more comfortable with books and people, and it can take him a while to warm up to strangers. Anyway, my parents grew up, and because they were very different people, they ran in different circles. Boy after boy came by for my mother, while my dad was spending weekends in the library. When my dad got older, he bought a bike. And one morning, he woke up and found the screws for his wheels were missing.
No!
Yes, and she did this until he wised up and started walking with her to school. And they've been walking together everywhere since.
That is amazing, he nodded.
They married young, but waited a while to start a family. They tell me not to take offense, but that they weren't ready to share each other with anyone else, not even me.
I shook my head. I really wish I could meet them.
They'd have liked you. Dad might have spent most of the visit hiding in his room, but he'd have liked you all the same.
Eric uncorked the wine, and we shared fruit and bread and cheese. For a long time, we didn't speak. The silence made everything feel bigger, better. There was no rush to fill the space, and after days and days of sound, the comfortable quiet with Eric was the most soothing thing in my world. It was like being alone without really being alone.
I have to ask an embarrassing question, I admitted after a while.
Oh, no.
He took a deep breath.
All right. I'm ready.
What's your full name?
He nearly spit out his wine.
I thought I was going to have to confess some dark secret and that's it.
I feel bad that I've kissed you and don't know your last name.
He nodded.
It's Aiko Petteri Koskinen.
Aiko Petteri?
Koskinen.
Koskinen.
Perfect.
Is it okay if I call you that?
Aiko.
I like your name.
He shrugged.
I only changed it because I thought it was too strange.
No, I insisted. It's not strange.
He looked down, toying with the blanket.
What about you? Full name?
I sighed. There was some debate over middle names, so... it's Edlin, Helena, Margaret, Shreve.
That's a mouthful,
he teased. It's pretentious, too. My name literally means Princess Shining Pearl. He tried to hide his smile.
Your parents named you Princess?
Yes. Yes, I am Queen Princess Shreve, thank you.
I shouldn't laugh.
And yet you do. I brushed the crumbs off my dress. It makes me feel like I was predestined to become a brat. He grabbed my hand, forcing me to look at him.
You are not a brat.
The first time we really spoke, I corrected your manners. He shrugged.
They needed correcting.
I smiled sadly. I'm not sure why, but that makes me want to cry.
Please don't. That was a good day for me.
I questioned him with my eyes, holding on to his hand as he continued.
When you got up onto the float, and you were speaking with Henry, after you were done, you looked down to let me know everything was okay. You didn't have to do that. You were busy and in a rush, and you still acknowledged me, even after knowing I was the type of person who bit my nails when I was nervous.
That made me want to cry even more. Did it start then?
Pretty much. and I've chastised myself for it every day since. But, of course, I assumed no one would ever know, least of all you.
I was a bit slower, I admitted. I think it was when you pulled me from the kitchen. You weren't worried about what was happening or how we might look running through a crowded room or anything else in the world, it seemed. I was unsettled, and you brought me back to Earth. So many people are in charge of keeping me in line, but no one seems to make me feel quite so normal as you. He swallowed.
I'm sorry I won't be able to do that much longer.
You have no idea how much I wish you could. After a strained moment of silence, he cleared his throat.
Would you please be so kind when this is over? Would you please not contact me? I'm sure you could find me anytime you wanted, but please don't. You have been a wonderful friend to me, and so have these men. I don't want to become the kind of man who betrays his friends.
And I don't want to become the kind of woman who deceives her husband. When it's over, it's over.
Thank you,
he whispered. But nothing is over tonight, I reminded him. He looked down, smiling a bit.
I know. I'm trying to decide if I have enough courage to ask you for another kiss.
I moved closer to him. You can ask for one. Or two. Or 12. And he laughed before he toppled backward, the rush of our movement knocking over his glass of wine and sending the candle flames dancing. Chapter 26. I got to the office a little later than I'd intended the next morning. I swept back my hair and dressed in a rush, but no matter how much time I spent on my face, I couldn't seem to wipe away my smile. It was a delicious feeling falling in love. I'd had so many luxuries in my life, and I thought I'd had a taste of this before, but I realized now it was merely a cheap imitation of something not meant to be imitated in the first place. I reminded myself it would end, and I'd already made my peace with it. I knew I was going to choose Kyle. I'd told Aiko as much. Kyle would make me happy, and I hoped I could do the same for him. I figured at some point, once Kyle knew I was choosing him, I'd come clean to him about some of this. And I knew Kyle well enough to know that he'd understand if I confessed to feeling confused about the process, and that kissing Aiko wasn't something I planned, both of which were true. I didn't want it hanging over us. Any of us. And a life side by side with Kyle was not exactly a prison sentence. He was smart, passionate, funny, charming, a dozen things a husband ought to be. He would be beloved by the people, our people, and he would stand beside me and fight Merid. He was so charismatic he might even render Merid useless. And deep in my heart, I hoped there was a chance that I could learn to love him, now that I knew what that really felt like. For the time being, I had a few precious days left with Aiko, and I intended to treasure each one. Nina tapped on my desk, bringing my attention back to the present.
Are you okay? What are you thinking about?
To be honest, I was thinking about the sound of Her Majesty Edlin Helena Margaret Shreve de Koskinen, and how suddenly my mouthful of names seemed like a line of poetry. But then I looked into her eyes and saw they were tinged with red.
About you, I said. Are you all right?
I'm fine, she said in a tone that said, not really.
It's just Mark. He's working such long hours, and now I have to work more, and it's getting harder to keep in touch. You know, same old. Distance isn't a big deal until it is.
I took her hands.
Nina, the last thing I want to do is cost you the person you love. You're a brilliant girl. You could work anywhere.
Are you firing me?
She whispered, looking like she might cry.
Of course not. The thought of you leaving breaks my heart. If you can have friend soulmates, you're mine. And I don't want you going anywhere.
She laughed through her glassy eyes. I just can't bear to watch you lose something that matters so much to you.
I get that. Do you have any idea how hard it is for me to sit back and look at your life right now?
I sighed. My life is a different thing entirely, and like you said, I could do worse.
Edlin, please rethink this. There must be a better way to stop Merid.
If there is, I don't have the time to wait for it. If I don't secure my place now, I'll either have a reign filled with people trying to usurp me and failing, or people trying and succeeding. Those options aren't acceptable. This matters to me. I can't compromise.
She nodded. Well, neither can I. And I couldn't leave you like that.
I took her hand, grateful as always for her presence in my life. Let me know if you change your mind, I insisted. If you need to leave, I could... I was stunned into silence by the sight of Josie coming into the office balancing a tray in her hands. She set a cup of coffee in front of Nina and one in front of me before she spoke.
Everyone said you took your coffee with 2 sugars, but if it's wrong, I can go back.
No, no, I said, still slightly confused. That's right.
Okay, and I was walking by the mailroom and they had these, so I figured I could get them to you.
She placed a handful of letters in the wooden inbox on my desk.
Thank you.
She nodded.
Also, I saw your mother this morning. She's doing very well. I haven't seen any of the boys.
Good luck hunting them down, I said with a smile.
Thank you, Josie.
It's the least I could do, she shrugged. I'm not busy if you need another set of hands.
Nina?
I turned and saw she was still taking in this change.
How's your penmanship?
She finally asked.
Excellent,
Josie replied, beaming.
All right, then. And just like that, I got an unexpected addition to the office.
Fox was quiet as we walked the palace halls. It wasn't the most exciting of dates, but the constant cloud of worry hanging over my head had sapped any creativity I had. Still, as the photographer checked the images on the back of his camera, he seemed pleased.
It's kind of sad that we can't go out to a restaurant or do something fun like... Do you bowl?
Fox asked.
No, I answered with a laugh. Putting on shoes that 1,000 other people have worn and putting my fingers into holes with goodness knows how many germs in there?
I stuck out my tongue.
Ugh. Not my thing.
He smiled.
But it's so fun! How can you even think about germs?
Austin once asked to go bowling for his birthday. We rented an entire bowling alley for the afternoon. After I realized you were supposed to wear used shoes, I couldn't get over it. No matter how much disinfectant they sprayed in there, I wasn't up for that. Everyone played, even Mom, but I watched.
That's sad. Are you afraid of germs?
His tone was almost mocking. I let the snub go.
No, it's just incredibly unappealing.
Well, that settles it, he said.
Settles what?
If you marry me, the first order of business is putting in our own personal bowling alley.
I laughed.
I'm not kidding. Maybe we could do away with the studio and put it there.
No more reports, I asked joyfully. Okay, that might be a tipping point for me.
I'm on board. You could design your own shoes.
Ooh. I could already imagine taking those weird shoes and making them worthy of royalty. That would be a fun project.
That's one thing I really like about you, Fox. You're good at lightening the mood.
I think we're good, Your Majesty,
the photographer said, retreating.
Thank you.
Thank you,
I called. Sorry about that. With things getting to the end, people really want to peek into the final four.
Oh, I don't mind,
he said.
I feel lucky getting this far. Getting to be with you.
I rubbed my thumb across his hand. Thanks, Fox. I know I've been busy.
Do I look upset? I'm on the first date with you as queen. How incredible is that?
I hadn't even considered how that might be taken. I'd been hoping to hint that he might be leaving soon. Now I felt trapped.
I've been so rude. How are you doing? How's your family?
Dad's all right. He's been bragging to everyone who'll stop and listen. You saw Fox was in the final four, right? That's my boy.
He shook his head.
I guess he hasn't had much to celebrate for a while. So, even though I kind of want to tell him to calm down, I can't. At least, I don't have to watch it firsthand.
I giggled. I know what you mean. My dad's into photography, and he likes to document every little thing. For some reason, it can be way more embarrassing when he's there than a journalist, even when they're doing the exact same thing.
It's your dad. It's personal.
Yeah. We fell silent, and the palace felt empty. For a moment, I missed the crowding mass of boys who'd stormed into my life barely 2 months ago. I wondered if I would keep thinking about them after this was all over.
Anyway, he's doing well, all things considered,
Fox said, filling the space.
He's really proud, but he keeps asking me questions that I'm never quite sure how to answer.
What do you mean? I watched Fox's expression shift from determination to embarrassment.
He keeps asking me if I love you, or if you love me. I've told him that I can't go walking into your office and demanding a declaration of love.
He grinned, showing he understood how unreasonable the request was.
I would never ask you to tell me your feelings. I'm not sure that's fair, but I thought you should know that I
don't say it.
Why not? I've felt it for a while now, and I've wanted to tell you.
I'm not ready to hear it. I backed away, my heart pounding in my ears. This was too fast, too sudden. I'd hardly gotten to speak to him recently, and now this?
Evelyn, I want you to at least know how I feel. You're going to have to pick someone soon, so wouldn't it be wise for you to have this information?
I turned to him and squared my shoulders. If I could face reporters and dignitaries, I could face a boy. Tell me everything, Fox. His smile was tiny, but sincere.
I think I've been a goner for you from the night you let me stay. You were so kind to me in the middle of the worst night of my life, and I'm desperate for you to meet my family. I want to see you on the beach in Clermont. I want you to spend an evening around the table with us. In a million ways, I think you'd fit right in with the Wesleys.
He paused, shaking his head like he couldn't believe he'd said that.
I want to help you. I want to be there for you in any way I can. And I'd like to think that you could be there for me. I don't know how much longer I have with my dad. I'd like him to know I've chosen a path before he dies.
I closed my eyes, feeling overwhelmed with guilt. It wasn't that long ago my mother was on what I thought was her deathbed. I understood that wish, but that doesn't mean I can make it come true, I mumbled.
What?
Nothing, I answered, shaking my head clear. Fox, these are beautiful sentiments, and I admire your honesty, but I'm not ready to make any promises.
I'm not asking you to.
He came closer, taking my hand.
I just needed you to know how I felt.
And now, as you said, I'll take all this into consideration as I'm making my choice, which will be soon. He rubbed his finger across my hand, a gesture that felt less comforting than it should have.
I'm serious about you, Edlin. Don't doubt it.
Oh, I don't, I whispered. Not in the slightest. Chapter 27. I don't understand, Nina confessed the next morning as I was recounting the date to her. Isn't him confessing his devotion a good thing? Like, maybe he could be one of the top two instead?
Everyone else was still at breakfast, so the office was empty. As the sun beamed through the windows, we sat together on a couch, legs curled beneath us as if this was the morning after a slumber party.
I don't think so. Something about it felt so forced. Not that he didn't actually feel those things, but it was like he orchestrated a moment so I would have to hear it.
I rested my head on my hand, the lines repeating in my head. And then I felt guilty. He talked about his dad and said I'd make a good Wesley, and it was all just off somehow. My free hand picked at the hem of my skirt, as if my fingers could undo my tangled thoughts.
I think what it was, I began, is that he said he'd felt this way since the night of the kitchen fight, but we haven't really had much interaction since then, at least not one-on-one. So for him to have this growing, deep, serious attraction to me, where does it stem from?
Nina nodded.
It's like he's in love with someone he thinks you are, not who you really are.
My whole body wilted in relief.
That's it. That's exactly what this feels like. So, send him home.
I shook my head. No. I promised Hale he could leave next. He's ready, and I don't want to disappoint him. Not after everything he's done for me.
Good morning, Your Majesty. Hi, Nina.
Lady Bryce walked in holding a muffin in her hand.
Your Majesty, I have some documents from your brother for you to review. It appears France wants to renegotiate their trade deal. I think this will be the easiest one in years.
Aw, what a handy little thing, that Aaron. I was sure this was more Camille's doing than his, but I knew his presence was helpful.
He sure is. I also have 3 contracts for you to review from New Asia. They're waiting on your desk. And the producer of the report would like to film an interview with you this afternoon. Something about transition pieces. I don't know.
Oh, so a nice, easy day, I joked.
As always.
Lady Bryce, did you help Dad this much?
She laughed. Only for a short time. Once you grew up, he wanted you to take on a bigger role. And as soon as you feel you're on your feet, I'll happily step back. Or maybe retire.
I scrambled off the couch and grabbed her by the shoulders.
No, not ever. You will live and die in this office. As you wish, my queen.
Your Majesty, Your Majesty!
Someone yelled.
Josie?
I called, watching as she ran in.
What's the matter?
I was watching TV. Merid.
She was gulping in breaths.
What about Merid?
She swallowed.
He was seen shopping for engagement rings. It's all over the news.
All the advisors flooded into the parlor as we watched everything unfold. Very quickly, the many people I didn't trust with my secrets were made all too aware of what Merid had been plotting and just how close he was coming to the crown.
He's got the look of a king, doesn't he?
One newscaster said.
Of course he does. He's descended from one, her cohort replied. Really, wouldn't that be so romantic? It would. Oh, it so would, but she is in the middle of a selection.
The newscaster brushed her hand across the air.
Who cares? Let them go. None of them has the charm of Merid Ilya, not by a long shot.
I flipped channels.
According to the jeweler, Mr. Ilya was looking at some rather expensive pieces, which would only be fitting if he is indeed planning to propose to the queen. This is yet another unlikely event in a series of unprecedented moves surrounding the royal family. First, we have a selection led by a princess instead of a prince. Second, we have a young woman ascending well before she's been either fully trained or her father has passed. And now, we have an outside suitor trying to steal the queen's heart before one of the elite has a chance. It is absolutely fascinating.
I flipped channels again.
Kathy here was on hand when the young Mr. Ilya came in. Can you tell us what you saw?
Well, he seemed a little bashful at first, as if he wasn't ready to admit why he was here, but after about 15 minutes of him lingering along the case, it was pretty obvious what he was looking for.
And did he seem drawn to anything in particular?
He had me pull out at least a dozen different rings, and when nothing was quite what he was looking for, I told him we could design a piece for him if he liked, and he lit up. I'm hoping he comes back soon.
So would you choose Merritt over, say, Sir Hale or Sir Kyle?
Oh, goodness, I really can't say. All I know is Queen Edelyn is a very lucky woman to have so many eligible men fawning all over her.
I couldn't take it anymore. I turned off the TV and fell with a huff onto the couch.
Ugh, I should have known, I said.
Silence seemed smart, but now he's made this huge. Mr. Rasmus grunted.
We need a plan.
We have a plan, I snapped. Is there anything we really could have done besides marrying me off faster?
General Ledger stood with his back against a bookshelf, still staring at the blank screen.
We could kill him.
I sighed. I really don't want that to be my go-to move.
Sir Andrews was angry too, but for all the wrong reasons.
You shouldn't have provoked him.
I've done nothing, I shot back.
You were actively ignoring him.
Calm down, Andrews.
Lady Bryce paced behind the couch, enraged. As I watched her, I caught Josie standing in a corner. She must have missed her opportunity to escape and was now trapped, looking afraid of the loud voices and anger that surrounded her.
We have to shut him up once and for all.
The only way to do that is to get Edelyn engaged,
Sir Andrews stated.
Yes, we're aware,
Lady Bryce agreed in a tired tone.
But she shouldn't be rushed into this. How can she have anything close to a successful marriage if she forces it?
It's her duty to make it successful.
Duty? She's a person, Lady Bryce argued. She's agreed to do this, and there's no reason.
She has never been just a person,
Andrews reminded her.
From the second she was born, she's been a commodity, and we need to...
General Ledger was moving toward Andrews.
Say that again. I'm not afraid to make death my go-to move. Are you threatening me, you little...
Stop. I breathed. And it was amazing. With the quietest of commands, the entire room came to a standstill. I'd known it was coming for me, and I really had come to terms with it. Merritt had shown how much influence he truly had, and I had to fight him off. I couldn't help worrying that even marriage wouldn't keep the people on my side, but... it was all I had left. Lady Bryce, if you would please, bring Fox to the office. It's time we said our goodbyes.
Are you sure, Your Majesty, once you narrow it down to three?
I'm not narrowing it down to three.
I swallowed.
Please send Hale soon after.
I'll be making my final choice this evening, and we will do a live broadcast tomorrow night instead of a report. No doubt after this week, everyone will be watching.
Absolutely, Your Majesty.
There, Sir Andrews. You have your progress. My official engagement announcement will come from the palace tomorrow afternoon.
Are you sure we ought to wait that long?
If Merritt pulls another stupid stunt, it will be shot down in less than 24 hours. That is good enough for me, sir, so it is certainly good enough for you.
I stood. It was done.
I was certain something would give me away.
convinced that everyone in the room would see that a part of me had lost oxygen and was suffocating then and there. In my head, I watched Aiko pack his suitcase and disappear from my life forever. It was a new kind of pain, pressed into this doomed heart of mine. Chapter 28. Everyone left in a huff for lunch, and I stayed in the parlor, craving solitude. In truth, I craved Aiko, but there was no way I could get to him without raising suspicion. Gritting my teeth, I turned the TV back on. I muted it, watching the images of Merritt play across the screen. Maybe the people were right. Maybe I should step down now. If we trained Caden for the crown, that might save everything. It would be humiliating for me to abdicate after less than a week, but it might at least keep the rest of my family from being shamed.
Your Majesty?
Josie snuck up on me.
Can I get you anything? Some food? Coffee?
No, Josie, I've lost my appetite.
I don't blame you,
she said with a tiny smile. I want to thank you for coming to warn me today. I know it doesn't seem like much, but those extra 5 minutes helped me brace myself. It would have been 1,000 times worse if Sir Andrews had found out first. She widened her eyes.
He's horrible. Do they yell like that all the time?
I nodded. Not Lady Bryce or General Ledger, but the others were like that with Dad, too. It's as if they think the only way to make you understand how adamant they are is to scream about it. We were quiet for a minute, watching Merritt's handsome face on the screen. He certainly had his wave down.
I'm so sorry, Edlin,
Josie whispered, drawing my focus back to her.
For everything, and for how I've been, and for what you're dealing with now.
You had no idea, did you? I asked, my tone gentle. Embarrassed, she shook her head.
I thought everyone did the work for you, and you just said yes or no.
That it was all parties and money and power?
Yeah.
She let out an almost laugh.
I can't believe I spent my whole life wanting to be a princess, only to see I could never, ever handle it.
I shifted on the couch, finally putting to voice a thing I'd been almost positive about from the very beginning.
Is that why you put Kyle's name in? So you could be a princess?
She blushed fiercely.
I didn't think he'd actually get drawn, and if he did, I didn't think there was any way you'd choose him. When I saw that kiss on the front page of the newspapers, I was so excited, I started designing tiaras in my notebooks.
And now?
I'd still like to have one of my very own, but I know I haven't earned it.
She smiled slowly.
And I realize that even if he wins, I wouldn't exactly be a princess, but it still feels like a big deal. I look at your Aunt May and how glamorous she is, traveling around the world and meeting all these people and looking like a runway model.
I can see the appeal, I agreed.
Mom's siblings definitely got a better deal than she did in certain ways.
As I thought of my aunt and uncles, a wonderful idea struck me, and I was thrilled that at least one good thing might come from this day.
Josie played with the hem of her dress. Yeah, it looks fun. But I was way too obsessed with it. I'm sorry I gave you such a hard time.
So am I. It was hard growing up with someone who wanted to be me without doing any of the work.
And it was hard for me growing up in your shadow.
She seemed sad, unsure of herself now.
You know, Josie, it isn't too late to fall in love with something else. You happen to have an excellent resource in me, and I'd like to help you find the right path,
so long as that path is far away from my tiaras. She giggled.
I have no idea where to start.
Well, you've proven these last few days how helpful you can be. What if we put you on the payroll as an office intern,
Whatever you're going to do, you'll need your own money for it.
Really?
She gasped.
Really?
Josie flung herself across the room, colliding with me in a hug. For the first time, I didn't mind her being so close.
Thank you!
You're welcome. I've got to do the good I can while I'm here. She pulled back.
I swear, if you step down, I'll never forgive you.
I hadn't meant to give that much away in a sentence.
I realize that doesn't mean much, but still.
Don't do it, you can't. I shook my head. I won't. I promise. As tempting as it is, I'm too proud to do it.
Dear Uncle Jared, this letter is long overdue. How are you? How's work? How's... Okay, I need a favor. My lady-in-waiting's boyfriend is also a talented scientist. I'm not completely sure if his field and yours are similar, but I thought you might at least have a connection that could get him work in Angeles. It would mean the world to her if he was closer, and it would mean the world to me if she was happier. Do you think you could help? Friendly reminder, I'm your queen. Thanks, bunches. Love you lots. Visit soon. Edlin. Chapter 29. Fox understood what being summoned to my office meant, so he refused to come, and instead sent his goodbyes through Nina, who arranged for him to stay at a hotel until he could get a flight to Clermont the following morning. I felt low, sneaky somehow, like I'd gotten off too easy. I'd been prepared for a battle. I got a retreat. But Hale walked through the doorway all smiles, dressed to the nines and ready to leave like a gentleman. His arms were open as he crossed the office, and I fell into them, trusting him to a fault.
I'm going to miss you so much, he whispered into my ear.
Me too. But you know how to get a hold of me if you need to, right? He nodded.
Nina gave me some information along with my flight details.
Good, because I'm probably going to need to speak with you soon.
Oh?
He asked, stepping back and straightening his suit coat.
Of course. Someone has to design my wedding dress.
Hale stood there, the smile wiped instantly from his face as if he thought this was some twisted joke.
Edlin, do you mean that?
I held him by the shoulders. You shielded me when the public threw food. You befriended me before I was willing to accept it. Even now, you've protected me far past anything I've deserved. The least I can do is be your first client. I'll be watching your skyrocketing career with interest, sir. His eyes glistened with tears, but he managed to keep himself together.
I'm kind of scared to leave, he confessed. So much is going to change once I'm outside of these walls.
I nodded. But that doesn't mean it's going to all be bad. He laughed.
When did you become such an optimist?
It comes and goes.
As do most things,
he said with a sigh. As do most things, I agreed. I hugged him one last time. Have a safe flight, and start designing as soon as you get home.
Are you kidding? I'll be designing in the car.
Hale kissed my cheek and winked.
Bye, Edlin.
Bye. With Hale gone, everything spiraled into a laser focus. This was the end. There were two suitors left and one blue-eyed soulmate. I wasn't sure who to speak to first. After some thought, I realized Iko knew what was coming. He wouldn't be surprised by my announcement. But Henry would, and I expected he was going to take it hard. I would see Kyle first, and that would leave me plenty of time to talk this out calmly with Henry, through the painful use of his positively wonderful translator. I was trembling when I knocked on Kyle's door. I hadn't prepared a speech or anything, and while I assumed he'd say yes, I really had no idea. What if he'd suddenly decided I wasn't worth all the work?
His butler answered the door and bowed deeply.
Your Majesty.
I need to speak with Sir Kyle, please.
I'm sorry, miss, he's not here. He mentioned getting something from his old room.
Oh. Well, I know where that is, thank you. I made my way up to the third floor, following the path I'd taken the night he'd agreed to kiss me in the hallway. What a strange turn our lives had taken. Kyle's door was slightly open, and I could see him tinkering away in the corner of his room. He'd flung his suit jacket and tie on the bed and was sanding a small piece of wood, presumably preparing to attach it to the structure beside it. Can I come in? He whipped his head up and a few strands of hair fell into his face. It was getting long again. It didn't look as bad as I remembered.
Hey there,
he said, shaking the mess off his hands and coming to greet me.
I was hoping I'd get to see you today.
Oh, yeah? He put an arm around my waist and pulled me to the back of the room.
I was watching some TV this morning, and I kept seeing all this stuff about Merid.
I rolled my eyes. I know. He's a bit of a problem right now. He swept some dust off a chair, and I sat across from him, looking at his little creations. Detailed sketches in blue and black ink, piles of books with paper sticking out, and his miniature building scattered around like a tiny town. He'd made a world up here.
Can he really propose?
He sounded nervous, like he feared Merid might take me instead of the country. He can, I suppose, but I won't say yes, I sighed. Turns out, Merid is not the ally I thought he was. He's been threatening to sway public opinion, and at first I wasn't sure he could do it. Then the way he got himself into everyone's house today. It's brilliant, really. Just like Lady Bryce said, it's an instant, battle-free invasion.
Invasion? Like what? Is he suddenly vying for the crown?
I ran my fingers over the lines of one of Kyle's drawings. I don't think it's sudden. I think he and his family have been looking to make a move for quite a while. The inept young queen was a perfect opportunity. Now he wants to be my consort and use my name to make his plans happen. My only hope is to get engaged before he can try to propose, because I'm sure the press will just gobble it up if I reject him.
So let's do it.
Do what?
Get married. Edlin, I'd marry you tonight. Between the two of us and our families, there's no way he'd survive. People have been pulling for us from the start. Marry me, Edlin.
I looked into the sweet and worried face of Kyle Woodwork. And for a minute, I really thought I could. I told myself it would all be easy to walk down an aisle and find him at the end. He'd always make me laugh. And after the last 2 months of being on the same side, I knew without question that he would support me for life. I will confess, I came here just now to make that very proposal, but I can't.
Why? Is it because I didn't get down on one knee?
He dropped instantly, gripping my hands.
Or wait, is it because you're supposed to ask?
I got down on the floor with him. No, it's not because of any of that. His face fell.
You don't love me.
I shook my head, laughing. No, in fact, I might love you a little too much. Maybe not entirely romantically, but I definitely love you.
Then why?
Because of this. I said, motioning to the work around me. Kyle, I'll never be able to tell you how much it means to me that you would take me for life just to save me from one person. Considering what a pain I've been, that's a miracle. He chuckled, still holding my hands. But all you have ever wanted was to get away from these walls. All you want to do is build,
I think that's a beautiful thing. So many people in the world want to tear things apart. How wonderful is it that you do the opposite?
But I'd give it up. I wouldn't mind.
I would. I would mind. And eventually, when the scary side of my life dies down, you would too. You'd die a little from the ache for it. You'd resent me. Tears pooled in my eyes. I can't live in a world where you don't like me.
I'll stay, Edie. I'm telling you, I want to.
I can't.
You can. You just said that you needed to. Who could do this better than me?
Hot tears streamed down my face. Please, don't make me force this on you.
You can't make me leave, Edlin.
I ripped my hands from his and shot to my feet, wiping my face. I looked down on Kyle, my sweet, sacrificing friend, and steadied myself. Kyle Woodwork, you are hereby banished from the palace for the term of 1 year.
What?
He stood, bawling his fists. As compensation for losing your home and for services rendered to the royal family, you will have an apartment fully paid for in Bonita.
Bonita? That's on the other side of the country.
In addition, funds and materials will be allotted to you to begin a housing project for the homeless in the province's capital city. His face softened.
What?
If you find the funds or materials insufficient, you may write the palace and request more, and I will have them sent to you as quickly as possible.
Edlin.
You will always be my family, Kyle. But I won't make you my husband. I can't do that to you. His voice was tender.
But you will make someone your husband. You need to now.
It will be Henry. Fox left a few hours ago, and Hale just got into a car. He was completely floored.
This is really the end, isn't it?
And I was prepared to be with you for the rest of my life. In a way, I guess I still can, but I'd hate myself if I kept you here. It'd be heartless.
What about Henry? Will you be happy with him?
I swallowed. He does worship the very ground I walk on. Kyle nodded, allowing that.
I suppose you could do worse than absolute devotion.
I smiled. Thank you. You have kept me sane through so much of this, but I can't take away the one thing you really care about. He nodded.
I understand.
I walked toward him and he folded me into an embrace, holding me so close it almost hurt. His voice sounded tight when he finally spoke.
If there's anything I can ever do for you, tell me.
I wept into his shirt. I will. And I'll do anything you ask.
Except marry me.
I pulled back, happy to see him smile. Except marry you. I let go, lacing my fingers together. I'm going to make the official announcement tomorrow. I need you to stay until then so the press doesn't get wind of what's going on. After that, I don't want to see your face for a year. You hear me, Woodwork?
I get a pass for the wedding, right?
Well, of course, for the wedding.
And Christmas?
Obviously, he considered.
What about your birthday?
Well, Aaron did say he'd come back, so it'll probably be a marvelous party. He nodded.
Okay, then. A year, except for those 3 days.
Perfect. And in the meantime, you'll just be doing the thing you were born to do, I said with a shrug, as if this was all nothing. He shook his head.
I'm going to build something. I'm really going to build something.
And you will change lives because of it.
Thank you, Your Majesty.
You're welcome. I kissed his cheek and ran out of the door before I changed my mind. I'll see you in the studio tomorrow. I'll send details once I have them. In the hallway, I held my hand to my stomach and took a deep breath. I'd made a choice. So why did I suddenly feel out of control? I hurried back to the office, glad to see that everyone was on the move, making tomorrow come together as smoothly as possible. Everyone, it seemed, except for me. Lady Bryce, can you please get Eric for me? I need to speak with him about the specifics of tomorrow. Consider it done. Chapter 30. I paced the office's side parlor, waiting for him to come. Every second the mass in my throat grew bigger, threatening to trap all the words I had to say beneath it.
Your Majesty, he said quietly.
And even though there were people swarming around, he didn't think twice about smiling at me like I was his sun and stars. I need to speak with you about tomorrow. Would you close the doors, please? I tried to keep my voice even, but his expression showed he knew I was holding back, and that made the attempt at diminishing how important this was that much harder.
Are you all right?
He whispered, even though we were alone. I exhaled, trying to keep calm. Not quite.
According to the news, you have an unexpected suitor,
he said plainly. I nodded.
How long has this been a problem?
Longer than I knew.
I imagine this has caused you undue stress.
It's done so much more than that, I swallowed. Because of this issue, I am forced to announce my engagement tomorrow.
Oh.
The tiny word held a world of shock. And, due to Kyle having other pursuits that I couldn't ignore, I will be proposing to Henry. Today. At that, he couldn't muster a word at all. I reached for his hand and he gave it to me. He didn't even look angry, which would have been fair since I'd backed out of nearly every promise I'd made. He was, quite simply, only sad. A feeling I identified with all too well.
I'm sure you understand that I will have to leave after tomorrow,
he said quietly. I'll have Nina find another translator. You shouldn't be forced to replace yourself. My breathing hitched and the tears came. I'm planning on going within the hour to see him. Do you think? Could you please not be in the room? He nodded.
If you had asked me to stay, it might be the first time I tried to refuse you.
We stood there, quietly holding hands. Maybe if we were still, nothing could change.
I'd prepared myself, he said. I understood what was coming and still.
The pain of standing there watching Aiko's lip tremble was acute. I fell into him. Aiko, I need you to hear it. Just once. I need you to know it without doubt. I love you. And if I was free, if I was my own person, I'd escape with you now. But Merid would use my absence as a reason to take the throne and my people. I shook my head. I can't. He took my face in his hands, making me look into his eyes. Though they brimmed with tears, they were as beautifully clear as ever.
What a privilege it is to come in second place to your people. What a queen you've become, that you can't bear to part yourself from them.
I pulled him to me, kissing him as if our lives depended on it. Maybe it wasn't the prettiest kiss, with moisture under our noses and mascara on my cheeks, but it was the encapsulation of all the other ones we'd never get to have. Kyle was right. It was the last kisses that mattered. I stepped back, wiping my face. I really wanted to be a lady in this moment. I reached down,
slipping his great-great-grandmother's ring off my finger.
Don't be silly.
It's an heirloom, Iko.
He wrapped his hand around mine.
The day I gave it to you, I had no intention of taking it back. I couldn't give it to anyone else.
I smiled sadly and put it back in place. Well, then. I reached down and pulled my signet ring off instead.
Edlin, that is for royalty.
And you would have been an excellent prince. For the rest of your life, you'll have proof. We stared down at our rings. They weren't on our left hands, but it was as close as we'd get. A part of my heart would always be locked away for Iko.
I have to go,
he said.
He should be in his room.
I nodded. Iko gave me a faint kiss on my cheek and whispered in my ear.
I love you. I hope you have a beautiful life.
And then, as if he couldn't take another second, he slipped back out through the office, sliding the door closed behind him. I sat down, gripping the arm of the couch. I felt positively sick, like I might faint or vomit. I ran to the door that led straight to the hallway, dashing to my room as quickly as I could.
My lady?
Eloise asked as I bolted past her and into the bathroom, heaving up everything I'd eaten today. Between bursts of sickness, I wailed, furious and broken and just so tired.
Get it all out,
Eloise whispered, coming over with the damp cloth.
I've got you.
She knelt behind me and wrapped her arms around my stomach. The pressure was surprisingly soothing.
I can't imagine what it's like to be you. Everyone having an opinion, everyone having a request. But when you're here, you scream and you cry all you want, okay? We'll get you through it.
I sobbed, turning myself into her chest. She didn't even say a word, just held me as I let everything flood out of my system.
Thank you,
I said when my breathing had slowed.
Anytime. Now, do you need to get back to work?
I have to go propose to Henry. If she was surprised, she didn't show it.
First things first, let's wash your face.
And with that, I began the slow process of preparing myself for the first step of the rest of my life.
Chapter 31. Eloise helped me pull myself together, and I looked nothing short of magnificent when I walked down to Henry's room. Just as I'd done when I thought I'd end up with Kyle, I reminded myself that this wasn't a bad choice. Henry would be devoted and kind, and while our means of communication might be unconventional for a while, it didn't mean that our life together wouldn't be a happy one. His butler answered the door and kindly ushered me in. Henry was at his table with books opened and a pitcher of tea at his disposal. He stood when he saw me, bowing in a way that could only be described as joyful.
Hello, today?
I giggled, walking over with the wide wooden box in my arms. Hello, Henry. I set it down on his table and hugged him, and he brightened at my affection.
What's all this?
I touched his books, taking in the pages. Of course, even if he had no help, he was studying his English. He grabbed at a notebook and held it up, pointing.
I write for you. I can read, yes?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay.
He took a deep breath and smiled as he held up his papers.
Dear Edlin, I know I cannot be saying, but I am thinking of you each days. My words are no good yet, but my heart,
he said, touching his chest,
feels what I cannot saying. Even in Finnish, I would say them bad.
He laughed at himself and shrugged, and I smiled.
You have beautiful, talent, smartness, and are nice. I hope to showing you how good I think of you. Also, more kissing.
I couldn't not laugh, and he was so happy to see me in good spirits, he looked like he might burst from it.
Still working, he said, sitting the notebook down. I getting Eric?
No, I said. Just you. He looked nervous at trying to communicate with me on his own, but even this was better than we'd ever done before. He nodded, rubbing his hands together to get out some of his nervous energy. Henry, you like me, yes? He nodded.
Yes, like you.
I like you too. He smiled.
Good.
And again I found myself laughing. See, Edlin, this would be fine. Henry, would you marry me? He squinted for a moment before his eyes widened in surprise.
I? Marry you?
Yes, if you would like to. He stepped back, smiling as always, but there was something in his expression I couldn't name. Disbelief? Doubt? But after a flicker of a second, it disappeared.
Wait!
He dropped to his knees, clutching both of my hands.
You will marry me?
Yes. He laughed and went to kissing my hands over and over, finally stopping and staring at them for a while, like he couldn't believe he was going to hold them for the rest of his life. Come here, I said, urging him to stand. He embraced me, holding me tight, and as sweet as all this was, I was fighting the urge to cry again. You have to give me a ring, I said, and opened the box on the table, taking in Henry's audible gasp. Set in the blue velvet were 25 different engagement rings, ranging in size and color, but all befitting a queen. He stared at them a second before turning to me.
I pick for you.
Yes. He made a face, a little overwhelmed with his options. Henry ran his finger over the dreamy combinations of garnet and amethyst, and lingered over the diamonds so flat and wide you could go ice skating on them. But then, he found a large pearl, set in a blushing rose gold, and surrounded by a string of diamonds. He held it up to his face and nodded.
For you.
I held out my left hand and he slipped on the massive, gorgeous ring.
Good?
He asked. That was what I would have to be satisfied with. Not perfect, not blissful, but good. And for me, after every mistake I'd made along the way, that should certainly be enough. I smiled. Good. You got a delivery, Eloise announced. I looked at the package, not sure what it was, as I hadn't been expecting anything. I set the box of rings beside it, fanning out my fingers. What do you think? I asked. Eloise's eyes widened. I've never seen anything like it. Well, they made 25 different rings for this, all one of a kind. A bit over the top, but I'm glad this one was in there. Easily one of my favorites. It looks beautiful on you, miss. She smiled at me. Is there anything else you need, or would you rather be alone? Alone for now, I think. Excellent. Call when you're ready for dinner, and I'll be right up. I nodded, and she disappeared around the door, the hem of her dress hitting it as she left. I never should have doubted Nina. I gripped the back of the chair at my table, trying to take things one breath at a time.
I'd nearly lost so much, but I had to remember how much I'd gained. I was queen, and I was engaged. I'd finally learned what it was to see other people and what it meant to let other people see me. I still had so much to accomplish, so many things I wanted to do for my family and for my people. I hoped I'd firmly settled myself in a place where I could do that. Sighing, I curiously unwrapped the thin box in front of me. I slid off the lid and gasped. Staring back at me was a beautiful image of my family on coronation day. Austin looked like he was plotting something mischievous as always, and Aaron was so handsome. All Caden needed was a sword in his hand, and the image of a perfectly gallant prince would have been complete. I flipped to the next picture, and we were there again in a slightly different pose. I tore through the box, taking in shot after shot, beaming with happiness. Lady Bryce clenched me in a hug. Kyle laughed as he cradled me in his arms. And the Ledgers stood with a hand on each of my shoulders, as if I really was their daughter. These moments felt so far away now. It was almost as if I was looking at another girl in all these photos. A little time and hope was all it took to change a person. When I got to the pictures with Aiko, they stood in stark contrast to all the others. I'd taken off my cape and he was in his vest, and I realized that I had subconsciously posed us like two people in love. My hand rested on his chest as he held onto my waist, and my head was tilted slightly toward him, like his heart had a gravitational pull. I stared at my favorite picture for a very long time, thinking how amazing it was that the photographer had captured the light in his eyes. Just hours after this was taken, I'd stared into those eyes, been held by those arms. How remarkable was it that I had this picture at all? Had it not been for the others, he might not have even walked over with me, whispering Finnish in my ear. I told myself that I'd been lucky we met in the first place. Had I fought my parents, had Henry not been brave enough to apply, had I moved my hand 2 inches to the right when I pulled out his envelope. I took the photo and walked over to the drawer where I'd been hiding my treasures. I smiled, looking down at my little collection, and remembering the past 2 months with a sense of gratitude. Henry's shirt that he made into an apron, Kyle's hideous tie that prevented world peace, Hale's pin, stabbed through a scrap of fabric, reminding me to keep it together. Fox's embarrassing stick figure drawing, Gunner's poem that I really didn't even need on paper because I couldn't forget it if I tried. These were the things I'd saved. I stood there, the photo hovering above the drawer. As much of a treasure as this picture was, I couldn't drop it in. There was no way I could put my Aiko in a box. Chapter 32. Before what would be the most important day of my life could even begin, I was summoned to the women's room. My mother could have held court anywhere, and I still didn't understand what made some massive parlor her favorite place to do it. All the same, she had called and I was coming. Miss Lucy was there, and so was Aunt May. I didn't know who let slip the news to her, but I was so thrilled I nearly bolted across the room to her. But then I saw that my beloved aunt was not the reason I'd been called. Miss Marley was weeping into Mom's shoulder. She looked up and zeroed in on me.
If you didn't want to marry him, fine. But why? Why did you banish him? How am I supposed to live without my children?
Josie will still be here, I reminded her gently. She held up a finger at me.
Don't get smart. You may be queen, but you are still just a child.
Mom's eyes darted between us, unsure what to do. Defend a daughter who was old enough to defend herself, but her daughter nonetheless, or comfort a friend whose son was leaving her with very little warning.
a pain she understood intimately.
Miss Marley, you have to let me explain.
I crossed the room, watching her crumple into a chair.
I love Kyle. He's become more precious to me than I ever could have expected. And the truth is, he would have stayed for me. He might have even stayed for you, but did you really want that?
Yes,
she insisted, looking up at me with red eyes.
It almost literally broke my mother's heart when Aaron left. It broke mine. Does that mean he should have stayed here forever?
She didn't answer that. I saw that Mom's eyes were downcast and she pursed her lips, like maybe she was only understanding this herself now.
I know we're not supposed to talk about the things that make us uncomfortable, like how your hands ended up covered in scars,
I said, staring Miss Marley down.
But we need to talk about it. It's remarkable what you did for love, and I am jealous of and awed by you.
Her face pulled together, tears spilling again, and I fought to keep myself together. I had too many people counting on me today.
We all know what you did, and we all know how you were restored. And I understand that you think you are somehow permanently indebted to our family, but you're not. Miss Marley, what else do you think we could want from you?
She still said nothing.
Ask my mother. She doesn't want you trapped here. You can go with your son if you want to. You could travel the world as dignitaries if you like. To think that because your life was spared, it is no longer yours is a lie. And to pass that burden on to your children? To make a gifted, talented, passionate young man spend his best years cooped up behind these walls? That's cruel.
Miss Marley's head fell into her hands.
You could have gone, Mom whispered to her. I thought you knew. It didn't feel like that. Not for me. Carter and I would have died years ago if it wasn't for you and Maxon. I didn't feel like I could ever not be in the process of thanking you.
You befriended me when I was a stranger. You talked me down from walking out of the selection. You held back my hair when I had morning sickness. Remember? Because it always happened in the afternoon.
They both laughed.
When I was scared of this job, you told me I could do it. You helped stitch up a bullet wound for crying out loud.
I was about to ask about that one, but chose to let it go. Miss Lucy walked over and knelt beside Miss Marley, taking her hand.
We have a very tangled past, don't we?
She said. Mom and Miss Marley smiled. We've made mistakes, and kept secrets, and done plenty of foolish things along with the good. But look at us. We're grown women. And look at Edlin. The three of them did just that. Should she be looking at herself 20 years from now, bound by every little lapse in judgment, feeling chained by them? I swallowed.
Should we?
Miss Lucy concluded. Miss Marley's shoulders slumped, and she pulled Mom and Miss Lucy close. I watched this, feeling a knot in my throat. A day would come when my mother would no longer be here, when my aunt could no longer visit, and these ladies would move away. But then there would be me and Josie and Nina, with daughters and cousins and friends. We would live together, and weave our lives into one another's and hold on to a sacred sisterhood that only a handful of women ever experienced. And I was glad that my mom had chosen to come here, across the country to the home of a stranger, and trusted a girl on a plane and befriended the girl who drew her baths, and that no matter if and when they parted, they would never be separated. Not really.
Chapter 33. The studio had been given a makeover. While discussing my engagement in front of an audience of friends, family, and staff members as I was broadcast live across the country, wasn't exactly the level of intimacy I'd been aiming for. Sometimes a girl just has to take what she can get. I searched the room looking for Mom and Dad. I needed to see them, to see their smiles at my choice. If they were happy and calm, then I could be too. But they weren't here yet. Caden, however, was. I watched from the door, seeing him stare across the room as if he'd been slightly bewitched. He spooked a little when I came up next to him. "You okay?" He cleared his throat and looked down at his feet, blushing.
"Yeah, everything's great. Just hanging out."
I followed his gaze to see if I could figure out what he'd been looking at, and it instantly became all too clear. Josie had given up on elaborate hairstyles and excessive jewelry. She'd abandoned heavy makeup and showy gowns. Looking at her now, hair slightly curled, the hint of gloss on her lips, and an age-appropriate blue dress, it seemed she was finally stepping into her shoes instead of mine. "Josie's really pretty tonight," I commented.
"Oh, I hadn't noticed, but now that you mention it, yeah, she looks nice."
Miss Marley, seeming breezy and peaceful, said something to Mr. Carter and Josie laughed, the sound still a little too loud for my ears, but pretty nonetheless.
"Since you're not on camera for the show, maybe you should go sit with her. It looks like she's got an open seat."
I peeked down at Caden, watching a little smile twitch onto his face before he covered it back up again.
"I suppose. I mean, I don't really have plans to sit with anyone else."
He walked over to her, straightening his suit the whole way, and I found myself dying to know how all that would unfold.
"Edlin."
I turned to Mom's voice, happy to see her coming over with open arms. "How are you feeling?"
"Totally wonderful and not at all terrified," I joked.
"Don't worry. Henry's a good choice. An unlikely one, but very good still." I peeked to the back of the room where Aiko was straightening Henry's tie, and they spoke back and forth, their lips a jumble of shapes I couldn't read.
"What's funny, though, is there's nothing to be jealous about."
I looked up at Mom, confused. "Jealous?
Earlier today, when you were speaking to Marley, you said you were jealous of what she did for love."
"Did I say that?" I swallowed.
"You did. And I wonder why you'd be jealous of someone suffering to get to the person she loves, when it seems like a very sweet boy is waltzing right into your arms."
I froze. How could I spin this around?
"Maybe a better word would have been admire. It's a very brave thing she did."
Mom rolled her eyes.
"If you want to lie to me, that's fine, but I'd suggest you stop doing it to yourself before you find you're in a position you can't get out of."
With that, she walked on, taking a seat next to Miss Lucy and General Ledger. The studio was usually cold, but I felt sure that the chill that went through me wasn't related to the temperature.
"And you'll wait right here," the producer said, dragging Henry to stand beside me.
"We still have some time, but don't go running off. Has anyone seen Gavril?" she shouted to no one in particular.
Henry pointed to the tie that Aiko had just fixed.
"He's good?"
"Yes." I brushed at his shoulders and sleeves. I looked past him to Aiko, who had done an amazing job at pulling himself together. I hoped I appeared as calm on the outside as he did. Inside, it felt like I was a sweater with a loose string being pulled and pulled until I'd be nothing but a knot on the floor. I walked around Henry under the guise of double-checking his suit from all angles. I dropped my arm as I passed Aiko, and our fingers met in a kiss before I moved back to stand in front of my fiancé. The thrill running up my skin was electrifying, so I clasped my hands together in front of me, focusing on the feeling of my engagement ring against the back of my fingers. In my periphery, Aiko's figure disappeared through the crowd, presumably so he could find his own level of sanity in this moment.
"So," I asked, facing Henry, "are you ready?"
He looked at me, his usually jubilant expression dim.
"Are you?"
I wanted to say yes,
and I could hear the word in my head, but I couldn't manage to work it down to my mouth. So I just smiled and nodded. He saw right through me. Taking my hand, he pulled me toward the back of the room toward Aiko.
"On voi,"
Henry said, his tone more solemn than I'd ever heard it. Aiko's eyes flashed between us.
"Mixi, ai?"
"I am slow here,"
Henry said, pointing to his mouth.
"Not here."
He pointed to his eyes. My breathing sped up, knowing my life was all about to fall apart and terrified of what might happen after it did.
"You are love,"
he said, motioning between us. When Aiko started to shake his head, Henry sighed and picked up his right hand, pointing to the signet ring. And then he picked up mine, which still wore Aiko's. "Aiko, please explain to him I have to follow through with my selection. Tell him he'll never need to doubt me." Aiko rattled off my appeal quickly, but Henry's expression remained undeterred. "Please," I pleaded, grabbing onto his arm. His expression was incredibly sweet when he spoke.
"I say no."
He picked up my hand and gently pulled off my engagement ring. The room started turning fuzzy at the edges. I was minutes away from a live announcement, and I'd just been jilted. Henry grabbed my face, looking deeply into my eyes.
"Love you," he vowed. "Love you."
Then he turned and clutched Aiko's arm.
"And love you, my good friend. Very good friend."
Aiko swallowed, looking ready to cry from Henry's words. Through most of the last 2 months, all they'd had were each other. Forget what this moment meant for me. What did it mean for them? Henry pulled us both in close.
"You, being together, I make your cake."
Despite my worries, I laughed. Looking into Aiko's eyes, I ached to let go and give my heart the one thing it truly wanted. But I couldn't get past my fear. I scanned the room, searching for the one person I needed right now. When I found him, I turned to my boys. "Wait here, please." I ran across the studio. "Daddy! Dad, I need your help!"
"Sweetheart, what's wrong?"
I took a deep breath. "I don't want to marry Henry. I want to marry Aiko."
"Who?"
"Eric, his translator. I'm in love with him, and I want to marry him. And even though he hates having his picture taken, I want to take 1,000 so I can put him on my wall and wake up to us laughing every day just like you do with Mom. And I want him to make me donuts just like his mom does for his dad, even if I have to let out all my dresses. And I want us to find our own thing, or maybe find out that our own thing is everything, because I feel like if I have him, even the stupid stuff would matter." He stood there, mouth slightly agape. "But a word from you, and I'll never mention it again. I want to do the right thing, and I know you'd never let me do something stupid. Tell me what I should do, and I won't question it, Dad." He looked up at the clock, his eyes still wide with shock.
"Edlin, you only have 7 minutes.
I followed his gaze, and he was right. It was 7 till. "So help me. Tell me what to do." After a stunned second, he turned back to me and pulled me out the studio door.
"We all know that you wanted to move fast because of Merid, and I think there's some value to your line of thought, but you can't let one bully decide the rest of your life. Trust me, you don't have to announce anything today."
"That's not the point. I want to be with Aiko so much it hurts, but I've done so many selfish, idiotic things in the past that I fear the people won't forgive me if I break even the tiniest rule. I can't bear to let them down, Dad. I can't bear to let you down."
"Me? Let me down over a silly little rule?"
He shook his head.
"Edlin, you come from a long line of traitors. You couldn't let me down."
"What?"
He smiled.
Your brother running off to France was technically enough to start a war over. I think he knew that. Did it stop him?
I shook my head.
Your mother,
he said with a laugh.
She conspired with the Italian government to fund the Northern Rebels, a move that would have sent her to her grave had my father found out.
I stood there stunned.
And me? I've been keeping someone who ought to be dead alive for over 20 years.
The Woodworks? I guessed.
No, I forgot about them, though officially they were pardoned. It's actually someone much more dangerous in the eyes of the monarchy.
Dad, I don't understand. He sighed, looking up and down the hall, checking for spying eyes before quickly unbuttoning his shirt.
I'm afraid there's only one way to explain this.
He turned around and swiftly shoved his shirt down along with his suit coat. I gasped in horror as I took in my father's back. He was covered in marks, some wide as if they'd healed without any treatment, and some skinny and puckered. There didn't appear to be any uniformity to the marks, except that they all must have come from the same cane or whip.
Daddy, Daddy, what happened to you?
My father happened to me.
He pulled his shirt back on and buttoned it as fast as he could, speaking in a rush.
Sorry I never took you to the beach, honey. I just couldn't do it.
My posture sank. Of all the things to apologize for. I don't understand. Why did he do that to you?
To keep me in line. To keep me quiet. To make me a better leader. He had a myriad of reasons. But there are only two of these beatings you need to know about. The first is one that happened after your mother proposed we eliminate the castes.
He shook his head, almost smiling as he remembered.
She chose to say this on a report while she was still in the selection. Of course, my father, who already hated her, saw this as a threat to his control, which it was. Such a suggestion is treasonous, like I said. It runs in the family. I worried he would punish her, so I let him take it out on me instead.
Oh my goodness.
Indeed. That was the last beating I ever endured, and for the life of me I'll never regret it. I'd take it 100 times over for her.
I'd never known about that. All I'd ever known was that they took on caste elimination together. So many of the unpleasant details of their history had been glossed over. There was plenty of awful along with the wonderful. I almost hate to ask, but what was the other one I needed to know about? He snapped the last of his buttons inside.
The first one.
I swallowed, unsure if I wanted to hear this story or not.
You see, my father was a very conceited man. He thought the world owed him everything because he was king. And really, he had no reason to be unhappy. He had power, a wonderful home, a wife who adored him, and his very own son to carry on the line. But it was never enough.
His eyes stared unfocused, and I watched him, still not understanding.
I always knew when his mistress was coming. He'd give my mother a gift earlier in the day, as if he was paying for his sins before he committed them. Then, at dinner, he'd fill her wine glass over and over until she was ready to pass out. And, of course, she kept her quarters in the other wing. I assume that was his idea, not hers. I can't imagine her ever intentionally separating herself from my father. Genuinely, she worshipped him. Anyway, I was 11 or so when I was walking through the palace and caught her leaving one night, hair a mess and a cape over her shoulders, as if she could cover up what she'd done. I knew. I knew why she was there, and I hated her for it. More than I hated him, which was unfair. As soon as she was gone, I went to my father. He was in his robe, drunk and sweaty. And I said to him, I'll never forget it.
I said. You cannot let that whore in here again. As if I could tell the king what to do. He grabbed me by my arm so hard he dislocated my shoulder. He put me on the floor and caned me across the back, I don't know how many times. I was so dizzy with pain I passed out. I woke up in my room with my arm in a sling. As I came to, my butler said I shouldn't roughhouse with the guards, that I was too young to consider them playmates. Dad shook his head. I don't know who got fired or worse to make that story seem legit, but I knew I was supposed to keep quiet. And I was so small, I didn't dare risk telling anyone. As I got older, I hid it because of shame. And then, somehow in my head, I turned it into something to be proud of. I endured this suffering alone, without support, and that was something admirable. Of course it wasn't, it was stupid, but we make excuses for ourselves when we're small.
He gave me a weak smile. I'm so sorry, Dad.
It's okay. It's made me a stronger person, and I hope a better parent. I hope I've done right by you.
My eyes welled.
You have?
Good. Well, to answer your question, a few years later, I thought my father really had gotten rid of his mistress. As I said, I knew when he was planning to bring her, and I watched for him to go into the old routine, and even snuck out several nights just to be sure. She was gone for months and months, and then one day there she was, walking down the hallway as if she owned the place. I was filled with so much anger at this woman, irate that she had the gall to show her face while my mother slept just around the corner. So I stopped her and told her something to that effect. She cocked her head and smirked at me like I was a bug, like I was nothing. Then she lowered her face to my ear and whispered, "I'll tell your little sister you said hello." And she walked away, leaving me completely gobsmacked. I must have stood there for a solid 10 minutes, too stunned to move. Did she say that simply to make a dig at me? Did I really have a half-sister I didn't know about? I wasn't going to beg her for answers, and it was clear that I couldn't go to my father. It wasn't until after he died that I could even attempt to look for her.
He swallowed.
Here's the thing, though. Illegitimate children of a royal family member are not allowed to live.
What? Why?
I think because they might cause a threat to the royal line. Civil war or political unrest does no one any good. Even now, look at the trouble Merritt has made. So, in the past, we eliminated those threats as soon as they were discovered.
He said all this coldly, disconnected in a way. So did you kill her? He smiled to himself.
No. I was enchanted with her the moment I laid eyes on her. She was just a child, and she had no idea who her father was. It wasn't her fault she'd been born half-royal. So I took her away from her mother, kept her near me, and have been protecting her ever since.
He finally risked meeting my eyes. Lady Bryce? I asked.
Lady Bryce.
I didn't know what to say. I had another aunt, and she'd done as much for me as anyone else in my family recently. More than some, really. I was indebted to her.
I feel bad keeping her in the shadows,
he admitted. I know. If she has royal blood, I feel like she deserves more.
It's not possible. And she understands that. She's thankful enough to be here,
he answered. And though we both knew the truth of it, I could see we didn't agree that it was satisfactory.
So you see, I have committed treason every single day for the last 20 years. Your mother has. Your brother has. I dare say Caden might be the only one who makes it out without ever breaking a rule.
I smiled at the truth to that, dreading just how many Austin would destroy.
Break the stupid rule, Edlin. Marry the man you love. If he's good enough for you to approve of, then I certainly do. And if the people don't, that can be their problem. Because who are you?
I'm Edlin Shreve, and no one in the world is as powerful as me.
I blurted without thought. He nodded.
Damn right you are.
The producer burst through the door.
Thank goodness!
You have 10 seconds. Run!
Chapter 34.
I bolted into the room searching for Iko. I couldn't see him through the throng of people who'd been scurrying around hunting for me. I tripped onto the stage as the light on the camera turned red, and I brushed my hair out of my face as I began speaking with absolutely no idea where my words would take me.
Good evening, Ilya.
I broke all the rules I'd learned about public speaking. My posture was atrocious, my tone was uneven, and I didn't bother looking into the camera because I was too busy searching for Iko.
We have a bit of a surprise for you tonight. On this special edition of the report, I have an important announcement.
Finally, I spotted him, half tucked behind Henry.
Please join me in welcoming Mr. Iko Koskinen to the stage.
The room applauded, and I stood there hoping he'd brave the cameras for me. Iko swallowed and straightened his tie as Henry patted his back, urging him to move. I took his hand and invited him to stand beside me, feeling a little lightheaded and worried that he may be feeling the same way.
Some of you might remember this gentleman from a report a few weeks ago. He is Sir Henry's translator. And since his arrival at the palace, he's proven himself intelligent, kind, honorable, funny, and a dozen other things I didn't realize I wanted until I saw them in him.
I looked over, and something about his expression, the hopefulness in his eyes, calmed me. I forgot about the cameras. As such, I've fallen hopelessly in love with him.
And I with you.
He answered so quietly no one may have even noticed.
Iko Pateri Koskinen, would you do me the extraordinary honor of becoming my husband? He let out one beautiful, disbelieving laugh, and the world stood still. There was no falling to knees or scrambling for rings. It was just him and me, and millions of people watching.
He turned and I followed his eyes, knowing he was looking for Henry. His friend stood there waving his hands and mouthing, yes, exaggeratedly, wild-eyed.
Yes, Iko finally said, laughing as he answered. I flew at him, wrapping my arms around his neck and pulling him in for a kiss. I was vaguely aware of applause and whistles, but the joyful pounding of my heart drowned out most of it. A corner of my mind told me I should be worried about how the country might react, how things would unfold after tonight. But the rest of me silenced that worry, and I knew with pure and perfect certainty that I'd found my soulmate. I pulled back to look at him, indescribably happy. After a second, confusion settled on his face.
So, what do I do now?
I smiled. Just stand to the side for a moment. I have something else to take care of. And then so much I want to talk to you about.
Same here.
The clapping dimmed and I stared into the camera, too content to be afraid anymore, and told my people the truest thing I knew.
I am aware that I've only been your queen for a few days. But in that short while and for a long time before, I have been very worried about my place in your hearts. I'm not sure I'll ever understand why I've come up against such disapproval, but I'm only now seeing that I shouldn't care. My life should be wholly mine, not yours. And conversely, your lives should be wholly yours, not mine.
In that moment, I felt the mood in the room shift. And maybe I was crazy, but it felt like it was bigger than what I could see in the studio.
The
These last 2 months have been a whirlwind for me. I've made it through nearly losing my mother, having my beloved twin move abroad, being crowned queen, and finishing a selection none of us expected me to have. I smiled, thinking of how fast it all happened, how it should have torn me apart but didn't. Through all this, some of you have been sympathetic, while others have felt ignored. Some have been supportive and others have been aggressive. Until recently, I would have said those feelings had no foundation, but I am sure now that is untrue. Before the selection, I lived my life within a small circle of acquaintances. I admit, my greatest concern in the world was my own comfort, and to maintain it, I was willing to sacrifice a vast pool of things, including the well-being of so many around me. I'm not proud to tell you this. I focused on the carpet for a moment, needing to steady myself. But meeting these young men showed me a world beyond the walls that I enclosed myself within. It is only in these past few weeks that I have learned how little I knew about my own country. Budgets and proposals can give me a blueprint of your needs, but it has been seeing you face to face that has shown me how much more you are up against. As such, I took a deep breath. I come before you now to announce that Ilia will become a constitutional monarchy. There were gasps and murmurs around the room, and I gave them a moment to settle, imagining those watching at home needed the same consideration. Please, don't see this as me shirking my duties. In truth, I know now that I love you too much to attempt to do this job alone, even with a partner, I said, peeking over to Aiko and smiling. It would be far too great for anyone, as has been shown by the young deaths and health issues of my predecessors. I will do my part so that you can do yours. For so long now, we here in the palace have searched for ways to make your lives better, happier, only to find that there is no way for us to do that. Your lives need to be in your hands. Only then will we see the change so many of you have waited through generations to see. I will find a suitable prime minister in the interim, and we will plan to hold proper elections within the next 2 years. I cannot begin to express how eager I am to see what you have in store for our country. I'm sure there will be many questions and hiccups as we reinvent our country, but please know that we in the royal family are on your side. I cannot govern your hearts any more than you can govern mine. I think it is time for all of us to seek out a brighter and better future. I smiled, not feeling fear or anxiety, but a sense of peace. If any of us had stopped worrying about how we looked like we were performing and focused on how we were actually performing, we would have come to this conclusion long ago. Thank you so much for your support. For me, for my family, and for my fiancé. I love you, Ilia. Good evening. I watched as the lights on the cameras went out, and I stepped off the set to a flurry of shouts. The advisors were angry, obviously, turning to my father and demanding answers.
Why are you yelling at me, you fools? He called back at them. She's your queen, for goodness sake, ask her!
I turned to Aiko. Are you all right? He laughed.
I have never been happier or more terrified.
That sums it up pretty well.
Hey,
Kyle called, with Henry coming up behind him to embrace Aiko. As they began celebrating, I moved away. There was much more that needed to be taken care of. I elbowed my way past confused and irate advisors, dialing a familiar number on the phone in the back of the studio. Merid picked up instantly.
What did you just do?
He screamed. I uninvited you from any participation in my reign.
Do you realize how stupid that was?
What I realized was that something perfectly normal completely horrified you a few weeks ago.
It makes sense now. Why would you want power in anyone's hands but yours?
If you think this will be the last you've heard from me.
Indeed I do. For my ear is now closer to my people, so I have no need of you. Goodbye, sir. I smiled, positively blissful now knowing this very important thing. My country could never be taken from me now. I'd happily given it away. My people wanted happiness as much as I did, and I was sure we were all done with people trying to live our lives for us.
Edlin!
Lady Bryce called, rushing in to me.
You brilliant, brilliant girl! You'll do it, right?
Do what?
Be Prime Minister? It's just until we have elections, but still.
She chuckled.
I'm not sure I'm the best person for the job. Besides, there are...
Come on, Aunt Bryce. For a split second, she looked absolutely horrified. Then her eyes swam with tears.
I never thought I'd get to hear those words.
I reached for her, embracing this woman who'd become one of my greatest confidants. It was strange because, even though I'd never lost her, holding her now felt a lot like getting something back. Like when Aaron came for the coronation.
Oh my goodness! I have to call Aaron! I exclaimed.
We'll add that to the list of things to do. Get engaged, check. Change the country, check. What's next on the agenda?
I looked across the room, watching my father shake Aiko's hand and Mom reach up to kiss his cheek. Changing my life. Epilogue. It's a funny thing to be the product of a fairy tale romance. It's another thing to think you might find one yourself. You can read the stories and watch the movies, and you can think you know how it's all supposed to unfold. But the truth is, love is as much fate as it is planning, as much a beauty as it is a disaster. Finding a prince might mean kissing a lot of frogs, or kicking a lot of frogs out of your house. Falling might mean running headfirst into something you always wanted, or dipping your toe into something you've been scared of your whole life. Happily ever after could be waiting in a field a mile wide, or a window as narrow as 7 minutes. This is Brittany Presley. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Crown by Kira Cass. This program was produced by Elgin Productions, executive producer Caitlin Gehring, text copyright 2016 by Kira Cass, production copyright 2016 by HarperCollins Publishers, all rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.